So my name is Jeff Lanier. I'm the label manager for Chesky Records, which is a Grammy-winning audiophile record label based in New York. Historically, it's been jazz, classical, singer-songwriter, and folk albums. More recently, they've been known for doing binaural recordings. Binaural recordings are a single microphone that's shaped like the human head, and the inputs are in the ears. So when you're capturing the sound in high definition, it sounds like you're in the room with the band, especially because we record in a church, which has a lot of great natural acoustics that feed into that process. So capturing it in binaural the way that we do, you're recording straight to two-track. You're not multi-track recording. So you're mixing with human beings instead of with faders. So if you need more vocals, the vocalist needs to either sing louder, come closer to the microphone. If you want to pan the guitar player to the left, you actually get the guitar player to get up and move to the left. So it's about capturing the picture of what the band is like live on an album. And we record it in 192:24 in high resolution, so it really feels like a 360, 3D audio experience.
Right, it sounds great. Leave it right there, that's fine. I want to ask you a couple of questions. So the concept is that you're going to be recording the way people hear, and so you put it inside this basically mannequin, like you said, or maybe in the future you have an Android, could just do it for you. But do you do it for just classical music? Would this work for like rock and roll or anything like that?
We don't do just classical. It's been jazz, classical, some acoustic pop things. Rock would be difficult because, as far as getting a balance, it's a single microphone. So you're not going to have a separate microphone for the vocalist, a separate microphone for the guitarist, a separate microphone for the bass player. So the drums in a hard rock thing are going to kill the vocal. So an instrumental hard rock thing could be possible because everyone's loud. But if you have a subtlety in a vocal, which even hard rock, the vocals are a lot more subtle than the drums.
Right. So hard rock, it's really best for something that's more of an acoustic experience, right?
Right.
Yeah. Or have you ever done anything like a Jazz at the Pawn Shop kind of a thing?
Yeah, so we did in February two recordings, Camille Thurman and Mark Whitfield. We recorded live at Rockwood Music Hall. So not only do you feel the band in front of you, but you have the band, you have the audience all around you. You know, clanking of glasses, murmuring between takes. It feels
cool.
Like you're there.
Yeah, because that's kind of cool, actually.
Right.
Yeah, especially when you have a little party or something and listening to it. So what's the range that you that Chesky sells? It's jazz, classical. You have old recordings or anything like that? Are these all new recordings?
These are all original to the label recordings, so we are recording them. So the label started in 1986, so we have catalog from then till now, but we're not re-recording or reissuing anything. These are our artists doing our recordings.
What are you guys still just doing the same thing you've always done, or have you changed course a little bit? Or
no, I mean, we're doing the same thing while obviously adding things as time goes on, like we're bringing vinyl back, as you noticed.
Right, I was looking at your cart here. I can't remember if you had vinyl before. Was that your main thing, or?
Well, when the label started, it was big on vinyl. Then it went away when CDs came in.
Yeah.
And now with vinyl coming back, we're doing more vinyl. We're signing things that are also doing well on streaming. Like we have Macy Gray now, who does well on all formats. But we also have a band called City of the Sun, which is a younger skewing band that fits what we do perfectly as far as what kind of instrumentation. But they have over 17 million streams of their album. So it's making things available in every possible way that people want to digest music. Vinyl, CDs, downloads, streaming.
Right. So that's what makes it different than Mobile Fidelity, for example. Mobile Fidelity's remastering old tunes, you know, and doing it on nice vinyl and so on. You guys are doing it from the beginning with your own original artist.
Right.
Yeah. So just real quick, and I'll let you go because it's really busy, and I do appreciate you talking to me. What are a couple, two or three, if someone said, oh, this sounds interesting, but I don't know anybody in your label, who would you recommend that they get?
Macy
just for jazz. Jazz is popular, yeah.
Macy Gray would be a good one. Chuck Mangione.
Oh, Chuck Mangione is on there. Oh, great.
Ron Carter. We have many recordings with Ron Carter. I mean, for me, those would be probably the biggest names.
Oh yeah, those are on regular labels. I didn't even know Chuck Mangione was still alive.
He is. But I mean, we've had a ton of jazz greats. Clark
right.
Terry.
Right.
We had some greats.
Right. Well, hey, thanks a lot. How can they get it? I mean, where do they? What's the website?
You can go to www.chesky.com, and it'll show you all of our albums, and from there, it'll take you to all the different purchase links: iTunes, Amazon, HD Tracks, everywhere.
Right. So it's www.chesky.com.
Chesky.com.
Chesky.com.
Yep.
Fantastic. I'm great. I'm glad I got to hold you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Uncommon Core podcast.
Perhaps now is a good time to give a little background of high-end audio for those who weren't around before 1990. In the 60s through the 80s, before the internet, before the electric car, the iPhone, Twitter, and reality TV, vinyl records were the thing. Back then, the recording process was somewhat unknown. Music was created in secret, unseen, mysterious places called recording studios. They had mystical reputations, something like Harry Potter's Hogwarts. And they had cool, mysterious names like Abbey Road, Muscle Shoals, Sun Studio, Electric Ladyland, Motown, and the Record Plant, to name a few. In these places, magic was made by artists who were, for the most part, inaccessible to the average person. And when they released a record, the only way you could experience the magic was to go down to the record store, purchase the album, and take it home. On the way home, you might look at the cover, contemplate the artwork, or perhaps even read the lyrics. Once home, you'd remove the vinyl record from its sleeve, place it on the round platter of your record player, clean it with a special record cleaning brush, lower the needle to the surface of the vinyl, move to your sofa, or sink into your comfy chair with your favorite libation, and the magic of that recording studio, that session, would be mystically transported to your room. The more you could hear of that recording, the more you experienced the magic of it. With the right equipment, you could hear the background singers, the little triangle being hit in the corner, dogs barking in the distance, the crash of cymbals or the bang of the gong. It wasn't just the gist of the recording. You were there with the magicians witnessing them create their magic. You could hear how hard they plucked the strings of their Martin guitar or blew into their flugelhorn. You were in the studio, felt the ambience, experienced the time and the space in all three dimensions. You listened to the whole record, and when it was over, you were back in your room. The spell was cast.
Okay, so Mr. Chesky just walked in, so I'll give you this or I'll hold it for you. Why don't you tell me a little bit about how you started the company and why you started the company?
I started because, first of all, I was a musician conductor, and I've always been fascinated about audio. And you know, the best seat in the house was where I was conducting because everything would sound great up there. And I said, if I ever make a record company, I'm going to make it from a one-point mic perspective, where it would be like if you were the conductor. So the whole philosophy of our company since day one would be like, what would it be like for you to stand in front of a band? And that's what we're trying to do, is convey real musicians in a real space. And that, in essence of like a quick little podcast bit of what we do. Real musicians in a real space, and you're standing right in front of them.
Well, when you started, what was going on? What was the year?
I think it was in the 80s we started, and it was a very exciting time because vinyl was big, analog recording was pre the internet, and it was pre video games, and everybody loved audio, and it was kind of cool to have an audio system. It was before MP3, so it was the golden age of high-end audio.
Right. And there were a couple, did you start, I mean, there was the Windham Hill guy.
Right.
And there was Mobile Fidelity. Where in the timeline did you
start? Right about a little after Mobile Fidelity and Windham Hill. I guess they had a 5-year start on us. But, you know, back in 86, I think we started making our records.
Right. Because the audio files before that, they would get imports from, like, Japan because the vinyl was better.
Exactly.
And so there wasn't anything much in America. So all these labels, and the Windham Hill guy wanted to do his own thing, and the Mobile Fidelity wanted to recreate the original master better, because most of them weren't that good. I mean, yeah, the first pressings were okay, but so you guys had pristine, silent vinyl.
Yes, that's what we did. Really beautiful 180-gram virgin vinyl is how we started. We started all of this before anything with that, and that was our thing. And then when digital came out, we started making recordings.
Right.
You know?
One quick thing here. So the vinyl that is available now, it's all, is it 180 or what is the variety you could get?
These are all 180s, right? I think so. Yeah, all 180. That's all we do is 180 version.
Right.
That's our thing.
Do you have like 45 or anything like that?
No, 33 and 180.
33 and a third 180.
Yeah.
Okay, great. And he told us about some artists. What would you say is your favorite new artist that you have on your label?
That guy Dave Chesky, his band. Love it.
Dave Chesky?
Yeah, his band. Jazz and the New Harmonics, my favorite band, and maybe, you know, the Orchestra of the 21st Century is my second favorite band.
Okay.
Because they're my bands.
Now, do you perform live then?
I'm at Dizzy's on the 30th of this month. Jazz at Lincoln Center.
City.
So I play with my group and I write symphonies and operas. But I like everything. You know, look, it's sort of like a grocery store. Everything we record, I like. And, you know, I have my favorites. But I have to say, off the record, I listen to the records about a year or two after, because by the time the record comes out, I've listened to this so many times, it's like I need a break from the record. And then I really can't appreciate it as a record till like a few years pass, and I don't remember doing it. Then I sit down and say, that's a nice record.
Right.
Because when I'm in the studio and we're fixing it and editing, all we do is listen for mistakes. I really don't listen to enjoy it and say, okay, we got a cut here and there, and this is no good.
I
talk to the engineer, maybe we have to fix this, and what can we do better? So it's not an aesthetic experience.
You're all too much in your head about
it's all a head experience and trying to make the product.
Right.
And then once if I want to enjoy something, I'll pick up his recording that I don't know anything about and just enjoy it.
Right.
So that's the thing. But after a few years, then I can go back and dig it.
Right, a lot of other, I think Bob Dylan and other people have said stuff about their records.
It's just like you get, you know, even stuff of my own band. I love it when we're recording it, love it playing it. But by the time the record's done, it's like I just have zero desire to hear it.
All those memories, yeah.
Because it's just all day long in your head. You need a break from it, you know?
One quick question. Where do you do your mastering and editing? Do
you do that in-house? Nick Prout's our in-house engineer and mastering engineer. We do it all there.
Fantastic. Hey, well, thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate it. And your name again?
Dave Chesky.
That's right. And you're the guy. Okay, thanks a lot. All right, bye-bye. You want to say hello?
Hello.
What's your name?
Luca.
And you're working behind the counter, right?
Yeah.
What's your name again?
Luca Chesky.
Oh, okay, cool. Doing a good job, guys. All right. All right, man. He's got your hair. Here, though, I guess I should explain to people what I have in this room is you have something unique. You have something it's a one unit which has records underneath, and above is a little stand, and above that is like an old-fashioned record player. Actually, I used to have one that used to cut the records. And it looks similar. Yeah. I don't know what happened to it. I showed it to some guy. I think he took it from me. But it used to cut them, and it looks very similar. Mm-hmm. And it's one unit, and then the turntable is actually on top of it, and the speaker is inside where they used to have the speakers in that old thing I used to use.
Yeah,
the cutting lathe thing.
Yeah, this is basically a recreation of a format that has passed us by. It's a one-piece audio system. Mm-hmm. Basically, the unit is from the top of the rack up here. It incorporates the turntable. It's got the amplifier, preamplifier, loudspeakers, everything built in. Mm-hmm. It plays not only vinyl, which is its primary source, but it also plays Bluetooth. It's got digital and analog inputs, computer connection so that you can rip to your computer or play back from your computer. And
what kind of computer connections? Does it have an optical or is it USB?
It's a USB.
Okay.
And it's compatible. It basically appears in your computer settings as USB codec. So whether it's Mac or PC, it's agnostic.
Okay.
It doesn't care what you use it with. There's no drivers or anything to install. It just plugs in and works. We've also got optical digital inputs so that some people have mentioned you can put this thing on the table under your flat screen TV,
right.
And that input can be utilized as a sound bar.
Right.
For example,
does it have inputs and outputs, or just inputs? Optical.
Well, it has inputs. It has optical input only.
Okay.
But it does have analog output. So if you wanted to expand this and perhaps go to external speakers later, we're able to drive external powered speakers or a power amplifier.
Well, the optical is going to be good for like an Apple TV. That's why.
Yep.
You have a TV, you have a little Apple TV, it's got an optical out.
Yep, and also a lot of the flat screens have inherent optical output as well.
Right.
So they can drive their companion soundbars.
And
bars.
I was surprised by how good it sounds, because it's, like I was just saying, the last place you want to put your turntable is on top of a speaker. You used to go over someone's house and you used to have a turntable on top of their speaker. And you're like, this guy is a nut, you know?
Right.
But here you have a speaker on top of a turntable, and it sounds really good. I mean, I thought these acoustic panels were the speakers. It was like Megapan or something, but it's not. It's coming right out of this.
Yep.
It sounds. How did you do it? You have a damping on the turntable platter, or what?
Well, there's a couple of choices of how you can do that. What people have been trying to do and failing for many years is to isolate the sound of the speaker from the turntable, and that is only marginally effective, because once you've got a suspension that is for the turntable, it's flexible enough to isolate the sound. It's also so flexible that it's very sensitive to walking across the floor.
Right, right.
You know, they bounce all over the place.
Right.
So we didn't want that. So what we did was we took the backwards approach, I guess, of looking at the source side rather than trying to solve the problem at the load side. And what we did was basically designed a speaker enclosure and system that resonated less.
Oh, I see. Okay
so we cancel some of those vibrations.
So you're going to have the audio, but you're going to move the air. Still.
Right.
Yeah.
But
it's not going to vibrate the cabinet.
Exactly. It's isolating the, or I'm sorry, not isolating, but limiting the generation of the mechanical vibration to the point where the standard standard suspension can take over and can handle what's left.
Right. And you also have it weighed down by records underneath, which adds makes it even better.
Well, I mean, in this stand, in this actual demonstration, the stand's here primarily because it holds our records, but that's
together.
An accessory piece.
Oh, it's an accessory piece,
yep.
But it's good. It looks great. It looks like it all comes together.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the only style you have? You have the wood and the black?
We have the walnut, and we also have a maple veneer, which is behind you over there.
Okay.
Both versions, we have two versions in terms of the turntable quality. In the Tone Armin cartridge, we have a standard version and a step-up version that we call the Carbon Edition because of the carbon fiber tone arm.
Oh, great.
The standard version has an aluminum tone arm, and the carbon fiber version has an Ortofon OM2 cartridge, OM2 red, exactly.
Yeah.
And the standard edition has the Ortofon OM10.
Right, so, and those are great because there's not a lot of tweaking you could do to the turntables, but you can upgrade the cartridge to the brown and the black.
Yep, you can go to the blue is the next step, then the bronze, and then the black. And we've done some testing because one of the things we wanted to do is to offer, for the audio buff, we like to upgrade.
Right.
So we like that upgrade.
Even though you don't think you're going to.
Right, you always do.
You always do,
And we did some testing with people in our office, like our accountant,
right.
And that sort of thing, who are not audio buffs to see if they could tell the difference between the step-ups. And they could. So the product is capable of enough resolution to identify subtle differences.
Right, and that's a $99 cartridge, and the next one up is like $250, and then the next one's like $400 and whatnot. Yeah. So you got an investment that's, you know, something to think about.
Absolutely.
Right, and it's a good, it's not a whole lot of money, but it's a reasonable amount. So. And it's focused right on where you want it, which is the needle. And how does it track? Does it track pretty good if you got some old records and you cleaned them off? Is tracking pretty good with this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an excellent cartridge. Record deck mechanism is made for us by Project, which is...
It's a Project.
Yeah. It's basically... this unit is basically the Carbon DC.
Okay.
We've replaced the Project's... motor drive electronics with our own, just right. to be able to give switchable 3345 without having to change the belt on the pulley.
It's a belt drive.
It's a belt drive.
Of course, because it's a Project.
Yep. Right. Yeah. But it all comes set up. The cartridge is aligned. You do have to install the counterweight and install the platter. But everything else is basically once you remove the shipping screws, take it out of the box, plug it in, put a record on, and listen.
Right. Yeah, the only thing that I would like to see, because I have these memories of that old one I had, which used to cut it, was that old-fashioned style finish, which was like the, you know, like the peach kind of color. Mm-hmm. You remember the old Art Deco-y stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Peach kind of color, and then it was white and like that peachy, brownie color, and it was real smooth, and that's how the thing looked.
That definitely has that retro look, yeah.
Yeah, it was retro, very retro, and that would look nice on here, too, yeah. Has a different finish, but it's a fantastic product. And how's it doing?
The response has been phenomenal.
You have to hear it, because you first think about it, doesn't you think, what's this?
Right.
It sounds great.
Oh, you should have seen the feedback we got off the internet when we first launched this initially as Kickstarter, and everybody's, you know, were things like, oh, don't buy crap from Crapstarter. Yeah. You know, this can't be done. These guys are obviously, it's a half-baked idea. But we didn't go up there until we knew that it worked, and it was proven.
Well, you have the balls to come into a high-end audio show, so you know it's got to be good. I mean, you're not going to come in here and just have something that's just a joke,
right?
You know, because these guys are not going to be kind to you. And I walked in and was like, this sounds pretty good. What is this? Oh, it's that turntable. So how do they get hold of it? How do they buy it? And I appreciate your time. You've got customers in here now. Well, is it online, or is it going to be in the stores?
Pre-buys on our website right now, which is plusaudio.com. With plus spelled out P-L-U-S.
P-L-U-S-A-U-D-I-O.com.
Correct.
Right.
Okay. And it's only available right now through our website. We eventually, once we meet up with supply and demand, we eventually will be opening dealers throughout the country. But for the time being, probably for the foreseeable, you know, next 6 to 8 months, it's going to be a website only direct sale.
Well,
product.
Some of the companies have the little Bluetooth thing that they're doing. You know, since it's just one speaker, a lot of, you know, are you going to do something like that? You think maybe?
Well, we do have Bluetooth speaker? Built into this.
Yeah, Bluetooth, so you can send it to another system.
There are two ways of doing that right now. One of the things that's big now is streaming audio with a product like Google Cast or Amazon's Alexa. You know, Apple's announced they're doing some things in next year. The way we've accommodated that is we have a dedicated input that if you were to buy let's say, for example, a Google Cast adapter for the $39.95 or whatever it costs, we have the 5-volt power supply to power it, and an input that has automatic signal sensing. So if you were to, say, go to your Google Home and say, Google, play Pandora on my Plus radio or Plus record player, it will sense that input. It'll turn the unit on if it's in standby, turn it to that input to a preset volume, so it'll work transparently as a multi-room system in the Google world or in the Alexa world. But why we didn't build that in just yet is because that world is so fluid right now.
Right.
So there are choices and more choices to come.
Yeah, a couple other people here are experimenting with that too, with new products.
Yep. But because it's so fluid, we didn't want to saddle the product with something that might be the next beta in a VHS world in a couple of years, or might disappear or change. So we've accommodated it. We thought about it. It wasn't an oversight. But we thought that the best thing to do at this time was not to build it in, but to offer the integration.
Right. Well, it's a fantastic, especially at the price. It looks cool, and you got the old records underneath, and whole system. How much is the stand?
The stand, we don't have a price set on the stand yet. It's this is just a prototype. It's out with our suppliers for quotation. But our target is somewhere between the $300 to $500 range. We don't know exactly what it's going to be.
The fact that you make it batch is nice, and maybe you can put, you know.
Yeah, you can fit about 300 records. The veneers will match the veneers of the two units, the two versions we have.
And it's good
and it's
to
very
have,
solid.
Because people are going to want, it's kind of hard these days to find something with records, that holds records, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah, so that's good. Fantastic, I won't take any more of your time.
Thank
you. Got customers here. Thank you, and your name is?
Bob Hazelwood.
Bob Hazelwood, and I'll give you mine. And what's your name?
I'm
responsible.
Rob
what?
Monero.
And you're responsible for backing this whole thing, right?
Well, no, we're colleagues.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, we're colleagues.
So you two have got it going?
The company itself is based in the UK, and the product concept was from a gentleman named Sonino Vecuri, and the design was done in Milano by a gentleman named Alexander Annebrink. They basically, we joined with them. It was their idea. It's our engineering internally.
But you had a Kickstarter, you said.
Yeah. The Kickstarter was basically, we're on the U.S. side. Marketing is not our expertise. We're engineers.
Right.
The Kickstarter was there both to find out what the market was like, what people were asking for, what they wanted, as well as to help support the tooling.
See how it'll fly.
Yeah, exactly. As well as to help support the tooling investment needed to get us started. That was very successful for us. We basically got our expectations met on the Kickstarter, sold a number of units, got some very, very good feedback, and now we're ready to fly.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks for coming in.
It's fun.
Time to heal and regenerate the world's forests and the communities affected by deforestation. With the Ecosia search engine, profits are used to plant trees and regenerate deforested land around the world. They plant in biodiversity hotspots where the value will be greatest for the environment and communities. Here's how it works. You search the web with the Ecosia search engine. Ecosia uses up to 80% of their ad revenue to plant trees. And for you, it's free. You're going to search the web anyway. Why not plant a tree while you're at it? Go to https://ecosia.co/uncommon. That's https://ecosia.co/UNCOMMON.
Soda, right. Not to be confused with soda turntables, right. So tell me about your company, because I'm not that familiar with it. I've seen it, and it sounds very good. The speakers sound great. They say it's on rock and roll. They have a punch. And they have they sound like, something you feel as well as you hear.
So we came out, basically, Mark Audio Soda was a collaboration of a couple different things. One, Mark Fenlon, who is the designer of the speakers, he came out, he was developing Mark Audio drivers for the DIY market. So full range drivers, that was his
What was the
forte.
Name of the driver?
The driver itself, so it's the company name is Mark Audio, and then the drivers themselves were like L-Pair 5s, L-Pair 7s.
Okay.
Actually, a little bit of notoriety, quite frankly. They're good drivers for the DIY market.
Yeah, I came from San Francisco, and there used to be speaker places where you could go and buy the drivers and build your own speakers. Yeah, Speakers Plus or something, I forgot what it's called.
So there's L-Pair 5s, L-Pair 7s, and there's the soda brands as well. So we started talking to him about collaborating to build a ready-made speaker.
Right.
So we got together with him. We got together with Dr. Scott Lindgren, a friend of his in London, to develop our crossovers. So since we were using full range drivers, we didn't need a complicated crossover. We used basically a second order crossover, a couple caps.
Right, some of the best things, no crossover at all.
Exactly.
A lot of people used to take car speakers that had no crossovers and make home speakers out of them. Yeah.
Exactly, that's true. So what we felt is we were getting a very, the full range driver story for us was that it's a very nice flat response and a very good sound stage.
Right.
Since we used that, one of the smaller drivers, a 2.5-inch driver for the higher frequencies, it doesn't get as directional. Higher frequencies are directional by nature, and if you use a tweeter, mm-hmm. tweeters are very directional.
Right.
Tweeter manufacturers are always trying to figure out how to disperse that high frequency sound. We use a full range speaker, driver. It does it by itself.
Right.
So based on what you're telling me, I couldn't tell in this room. I mean, these are not the best places to listen to it. It must have really good sound staging then. I mean, the imaging must be really good too.
In fact, to tell you the truth, you just exactly took the words out of my mouth, and all the reviewers. The reviewers that have reviewed our speakers, first thing they're saying, wow, these have great sound staging. Just really.
Yeah, the sound stage and the image gets all screwed up once you complicate things.
Thanks, right. Yeah. And so we have very good sound staging and a nice flat frequency response. So there's no dips at the crossover points because we're really only crossing over our speakers at 2400 or 1900, depending on them.
So these sound good with rock and roll, but they must sound great with jazz too.
They do. In fact, I play a lot of jazz on these as well as female vocals and such. So, yes.
Right. And you have finishes which are like, at least in there, you have the white and probably black, right?
Yeah. So depending on the models, we have the piano finishes,
right.
Piano lacquer finishes.
Looks like the lacquer.
So
piano,
it's the white, black, and we do have a red as well in one of the models. The other ones we use also go with a dark oak and a light oak. As well.
Okay. Yeah. People are getting away, I guess, from those exotic woods.
Yeah,
I mean.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you could get a lot with oak. I mean, oak is a nice wood.
It's a nice wood. What we do is we have our cabinet manufacturer uses high density MDF, so it's a little higher density material than a regular MDF.
Right.
And then we, of course, use the lacquer finishes, but the wood finishes are a veneer.
Right.
Yeah, wood
veneer. Yeah, well, like I said, it sounded good in there, and it was an intriguing story that you have there. And where can they buy them? I mean,
so right now, right now we have them online at markaudio-soda.us.
Uh-huh.
Also, we're starting to set up a dealer network, as anyone imagines nowadays.
Say the website again.
Sure, it's mark-audio.
Okay, M-A-R-K.
Mark-audio.
Mark-audio, yeah, like you have it written here.
Yeah.
markaudio-soda.com.
.us. That's it.
.us, okay.
It's US, okay.
Because it started in Europe, you said?
It started, actually our first sales were started in Japan and then went to Europe. So we had to separate
why the .us, yeah.
.us,
yep. And is it in Asia too? Because actually I have a lot of people listening from Thailand.
Right now we're distributed more in Japan.
Oh, okay.
The Japan market is fairly well covered. And then we're starting in England and then moving into the European continent.
Where's it more popular, Japan or here? I guess Japan's been there longer, right?
Japan's been there longer, and the distributor there had set up a dealer network. So it is getting very, very popular there. But we're starting to do some internet sales as well here.
Right.
Yeah, would you call it a Japanese speaker then?
No. Actually, amazingly enough, the Japanese speakers that are being sold the most, it's called a Tozy 1 and Tozy 2. It's a very small, single driver speaker. And it sort of fits Japanese lifestyles. It's
smaller homes, this
right.
and that, smaller listening rooms.
You make those too?
We do make those as well.
They're called Tozies?
Tozies, T-O-Z-Z-I.
So all our speakers are named after Italian composers, Tozzi, Zesty.
Is that like an audiophile speaker or more of just a lifestyle speaker?
I'd say it's more of a lifestyle speaker,
yeah.
Although quite frankly, using the full-range driver is still very, very good.
Still pretty good,
yeah.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, it's interesting because Japan has all of the electronic, the musical gear,
yeah.
you know, the synthesizers and the keypads and all that other stuff. But they really didn't make a dent, at least in the U.S. market, with the speakers.
They never have. Yeah. The speakers themselves, Japanese speakers, never sounded quite right, I don't think. Yeah. Is what it really gets down to.
Yeah, so you would listen to other speakers and you'd be hearing Japanese instruments, but you wouldn't be hearing Japanese speakers.
Yeah. Exactly.
But that's okay. I mean, you spread it around, right?
That's true.
And what's your name?
My name is Dwight. And the last name is Sakuma, S-A-K-U-M-A.
Okay, and it sounds interesting product, and I like the way it sounds, and I like the way it looks.
Excellent.
And I hope wish you a lot of luck.
All right, appreciate it.
Great story, too.
All right, thanks again.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming out now, all the way. All right, I was on my way out, and I wanted to get Crowell, because I didn't want to leave you out. And I used to have, be in the audio, selling high-end audio many years ago in the 80s. And actually, I have my own mic. But back then, there was Conrad Johnson and Audio Research that always got the headlines, and Crowell was right there too, but it was like this solid state thing and didn't get respect. Now Crowell is still as strong as ever, and it's still one of the best high-end audio companies and brands out there, and I don't know what happened to all the other guys, you know? So I wanted to make sure and get Crowell. It's like the Gibraltar, you know, of high-end audio.
Well, thank you very much. Next month, we celebrate our 37th year in business, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And we have a new line of products coming up, and we're just going to keep making products for as long as... people want to buy them.
Right. And the thing is, you started in what year again?
December 1st, 1980.
I know you got a sore throat. December 1st, 1980.
Yeah.
And was it a small company out of a garage, or was it always a big company?
That was Dan and myself in 1,000 square feet in the basement of an old manufacturing building in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Okay, so that's the story also that I wanted to get out there.
Yeah.
And now, how big are you now?
Well, we've grown very, very big, and then we've shrunk a bit. I don't know if you recall, but we had some trouble about 8 years ago. Actually, 8.5 years ago.
I don't remember that, actually.
Anyhow.
I don't think that was your low point. I think your low point was your Fabio's favorite high-end audio. But anyway, so you had some trouble, and you're making a comeback then.
Yes. We took in a partner, and the partner actually threw Dan and myself out of the company.
Oh.
And then proceeded to sort of...
change it.
Well, he didn't know what he was doing, and he wasn't into the business, and he just sort of let it go.
Right. Okay.
And so I've recovered it by myself about a year ago, and I'm the sole owner now. And I'm rebuilding it, and you know, you'll see me for a long time here.
Great. Okay, and I know you got a sore throat, so that's the main story I want to do, because you're, like I said, you're like the Rock of Gibraltar in high-end audio.
Well, thank you. I feel like the Rock.
There's few. I mean, you're from America. I mean, it's like Lynn. No one knows Lynn anymore, you know? But do you have a turntable coming out or something? I'm not so sure. I want a turntable from Crowell, but...
No, we don't have a turntable.
Okay,
because
everybody's kind of jumping on the bandwagon.
Our next product is going to be an integrated amplifier, DAC digital integrated amplifier.
Okay, because you have a really nice integrated amplifier at a really nice price, or you did at a really nice price point.
We still do. It's called
not
the
cheap,
Vanguard.
But it's not your high-end audio price, and it's great. It sounds, because I used to hear one of those friend had ones.
The new one is going to be a retail of $4,000 just for the integrated.
Right.
And then $5,000 for the digital
version.
Yeah.
And it's all circuitry, all in one unit, which is always a really good idea and a really good design.
And it will have... hopefully every bell and whistle that anybody would want and that we might not have on our current product.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah, those are good, and it's still going to have that Crowell sound. Exactly.
It's going to be wonderful. Right. Everyone's going to love it, and we'll be bringing next a phono section. So that's the closest we're going to get to turntables. And then after that, we have a headphone amp coming.
Okay, I'm going to cut it there, and I appreciate you, even though you have a sore throat talking
Thank
to
you.
Me. Like I said, I wanted to get Carol in, and it would have been something without it. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the Uncommon Core podcast with Thomas Howell. I'm Satoko Smith. Thank you for listening.